With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. A cross between ZZ Top and Sherlock Holmes. You're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, all right. Welcome to the Brian McClain Show right here at today's News Talk. TNTRadio.live is the website. Shout out to everybody in the chat room over there. It's great to see you. Thank you for hanging out with us over here at today's News Talk. Of course, you can find the episodes link, the donate link, the store, the What's on Events calendar. Highly recommend the What's on Events calendar, especially if you have an event coming up, rally, march, anything like that. We are here to help you promote it. Now, I have a brief message here. The inaugural Conference of Australians for Science and Freedom brings together thinkers and community leaders to share learnings, formulate plans, and help establish new and emerging networks and organizations to restore a thriving Australian society founded on science and freedom. Note how they didn't say the science. I love that. Joining the exciting lineup of health professionals, scientists, economists, lawyers, journalists, and community leaders to discuss a range of hot issues, including healthcare policy. That's a big one in the wake of everything that's happened in the last 3 years. Democracy and human rights. That's a big one right now. Education, the media, and the role of grassroots organizations. Big, 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 big. The Australians for Science and Freedom Conference will be held at the University of New South Wales, High Street, Kensington, New South Wales, from 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, the 18th of November, and 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, the 19th of November. Plus, this is the kicker, TNT Radio will be broadcasting from the conference. Get your tickets at scienceandfreedom.org. Now, real quick, right here in America, the Air Force, oh boy, the Air Force raises maximum recruiting age to 42 following a recruiting miss this year for 2023. In an October 24 memo, the Department of the Air Force announced revised entry policies that state individuals seeking to commission must be between the ages of 18 and 42. While those seeking to enlist must be at least 17 years old, but not yet 42 years old, the new policy effectively raises the upper age limit to enter the U.S. Air Force and U.S. Space Force. Hey, have some fun with Space Force, right? I don't know if they're doing much, but playing with satellites and stuff like that. But anyway, that max age has raised from 39 to 42 after a dismal recruiting period here. So, are we surprised? No, not really. We know that recruiting is way down in the United States. I don't know if the concept of a woke and green military has really helped the cause when it comes to enlistment. Don't forget to visit us, as I said, on the What's on Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live, and stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Stream us anywhere.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, beloved star, most known for his role in Friends as Chandler Bing, has sadly passed away at the age of 54. Very sad to see that. He wanted people to remember him after he passed away for being someone that helped people. He was very open and frank about his journey and his problems with addictions, and he went out of his way to help people with this. So it's a sad loss, and we are joined now by correspondent from The Insider, Kristen Acuna. Kristen, welcome to the show. It's great to see you today. Your thoughts on the passing of Matthew Perry?
Hi, Brian. Yeah, thanks for having me. Just minor correction, it's Kirsten. I get Kristen all the time, so no worries.
Sorry about that. Noted.
That's all right. Shocking, tragic. Friends is just a staple that, you know, many of us grew up and watched. The show's 10 seasons are streaming on Max right now. I'm sure fans have been revisiting many of Perry's best episodes on the show. But I mean, I also think of him in, you know, movies like 17 Again, where Zac Efron played a younger version of him. I think of Fools Rush In, which was a classic 90s rom-com. with Selma Hayek. But I think I love what you had mentioned, Brian, before you welcomed me in. I think that, you know, Perry really did want to be remembered. There's a quote that's been going around X, formerly Twitter, today, where Perry said, "When I die, I know people will talk about Friends, 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 and I'm glad of that. Happy I've done some solid work as an actor." But he said it would be nice if Friends was listed far behind the things that he did to try to help other people. And he said, "I know it won't happen, but it would be nice." So with that in mind, I think it is worth mentioning, you know, how Perry, you know, created like a sober living facility for men called the Perry House in Malibu, California. Sold in 2015, was, you know, they relocated its services, but he received a Champion of Recovery Award from the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy for his work doing that. And, you know, he just really wanted to break the stigma surrounding addiction and encourage more people to seek treatment.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. I've been watching some interviews with him today. I was doing that anyways before I even knew that we would be speaking about this. So big shout out to Kimberly out there for setting up this talk, because I was already kind of in that groove. You know, I wanted to get in his head a little bit. And I noticed I was watching, you know, he wrote a book too. And first off, he mentioned the And this is a powerful feeling. Just as a broadcaster, I've got to experience this on a small scale, nothing like him, I'm sure. But when somebody comes to you and they say, "Hey, I was, you know, reading your words or listening to you or whatever the case may be, and it changed, I had a, you know, epiphany, I had a realization and it changed me." You know, I've had people tell me that they've recovered from physical injuries or addiction by just, you know, binge listening to my programs, which, it's hard. I stumble even trying to think of the words, like how that makes me feel to hear that from someone. So, and I noticed that it's a big topic in his book, right? Like his book is sort of a gateway into a lot of people that are feeling lost or alone or like they're trapped. And, you know, they read something like that and it's like, oh, maybe I'm not alone. This is actually common.
Yeah. His book, you know, he wrote candidly about his addiction issues in the 22 memoir. It was called Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. He just described years of alcohol and opiate abuse. And in 2022, he also had told the New York Times he probably spent around $9 million or something around that amount trying to get sober. I think when you are that open and honest about your own addiction and you're as big of a star as Perry was, I'm sure that spoke to so many people, and it, you know, it probably just, it helped. I'm sure that it helped others.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I also noticed, I was watching an interview with him. I think it was at one of his like a presser for the release of his book. I don't remember who the gentleman was that was speaking to him. Maybe you'll recognize it perhaps, but, and he wrote about it in the book apparently, but I didn't know this. I just learned this morning. When he was a baby in what, like the 70s or something, he was an upset, crying baby, and his parents' doctor, or the pediatrician, said, "Give him these; he'll stop crying." And it was phenobarbital. And he said, from the time he was 30 days old till the time he was like 60 days, like there was a couple months when he was an infant, where the parents were giving him phenobarbital, and he said that, you know, he's never felt like he slept correctly, and he always kind of wondered if maybe that was, you know, sort of a catalyst for his addictive personality, perhaps. I thought that was kind of freaky and interesting.
Yeah, I actually, that's the first time I'm ever hearing that.
Yeah, hard to believe, right? And he did, he was nice about it. You know, he said, "This isn't a dig against my parents." Of course, you know, it's the 70s, nobody has internet. And, you know, when your doctor tells you to do this and, you know, then it seems to work, it's like fine and dandy. But I mean, phenobarbital is a barbiturate. I mean, it's absolutely maddening to think that, you know, you'd be giving a baby barbiturates because it cries.
Yeah, no, that's just something to hear. You know, I know that with everything that's been going on right now with the investigation, you know, there has been an autopsy conducted. But just like to be clear, like cause of death, you know, from the Los Angeles County Medical Examiner, you know, is still currently listed online as just like deferred. And just for anyone who's listening, just like the most up-to-date things, you know, law enforcement officers, sources who spoke to the LA Times, they said that there were, you know, no drugs found at the scene. And the sources also had mentioned to the outlet just that no foul play was suspected. But some people may have heard that, you know, something about a toxicology report that was going on. And that's because there were prescription medications, you know, found. I'm sure we all have prescription medications. But so a toxicology report was deemed necessary. And as of right now, the medical examiner's office is waiting on the results of the toxicology reports. And that's, you know, just to determine cause of death. And that's something that will probably take weeks for us to, yeah, to hear anything else on.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Ray Liotta passed away, I was like, oh man, what the heck? And it took a year before they released that he had a heart attack and blood clots. And I'm sure the family knew before that, but it wasn't released to the public until at least a year, I think.
Yeah, these things just take, they take weeks, they take sometimes a few months. And in that case with Liotta, that took like a year.
Yeah. And what happened, to your knowledge, leading up to it? It's my understanding that I saw a picture of his home. It's absolutely beautiful. He's got a very nice pool and a large hot tub attached to the pool. It's my understanding he was found in the hot tub by his personal assistant.
That is correct. That's what's been reported so far. You know, it's been reported as an apparent drowning, but as of, you know, right now, just the cause of death, it is listed online just as deferred because as I mentioned, they are waiting on like that toxicology report now that was deemed necessary just because prescription medications were found.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I hate to even ask, but I have to. What's people get very suspicious. People come up with, you know, different opinions and I'm trying to not use the word conspiracy theories. But what are you hearing in sort of the darker corners of the internet from fans and people that are wondering if, you know, they're really getting all the information?
Yeah, you know, I really feel like I haven't been trying to focus on that and just really like look at the facts of what's going on with the case right now. I think like at least here, because I'm in the New York City like area right now, I know that a lot of us were like focused on how the fans were just kind of like pouring out on the streets since yeah. Sunday. They were going over to like just the outpour of love has just been really something like where a lot of people just began going to the friend's apartment in New York City and they've been leaving flowers there. So, I mean, I feel like those are things that are better to be focusing on at the moment, like instead of it just doesn't really. It's never great to like go down the conspiracy rabbit hole if they're, you know, if we're just not really sure what exactly yeah. is going on. And it's always best to go straight to the medical examiner or go straight to, you know, the just to LA County and to the people to get the straight information that's going on.
Yeah, it's hard for everybody, you know, because we've had dubious cases like Chester Bennington's death and Anthony Bourdain. You know, there's been a number of people where it's a lot of folks feel like, you know, there's got to be more to this than that. It just doesn't make sense. So I can totally relate. And as far as what you're talking about, just the outpouring, I mean, what else are you hearing from the fans? Are there like vigils being set up? I mean, if someone out there is wants to, you know, go pay their respects, are there events happening in New York?
You know, the main thing I've just seen right now is people going outside of the friend's apartment on the west side, in the West Village, rather, in New York City. So I'm sure that people are probably gathering around there. There's usually a tour of like the different friends' locations in the city. So I'm sure that that's something that, you know, people are probably like filling up to try it. To like do that as much as possible. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like going to be a thing that's just like sold out over the next like week. Honestly, otherwise, like I've been waiting to see reactions from like the main cast, you know, just to Perry. I think that's what a lot of us have been waiting to see. I know that Morgan Fairchild, who played Perry's character's mother, so Chandler Bing's mother, She had written on X, again, formerly Twitter, that, you know, she was heartbroken about his untimely death. Pajay Brewster, she briefly appeared as like a love interest for Chandler Bing also. She had wrote on X that he was just always so lovely to her on Friends. And then also every time that she saw him decades afterward. And she had also just asked people to go and read his memoir that came out last year. I think the one that hit me the most so far, because I grew up like watching Friends like most people, was just seeing the statement that came out from the co-creators and the executive producers. Yeah. So Marta Kaufman, David Crane, and Kevin Bright. And, you know, they described Harry as just this brilliant talent. And from the day where they first heard him embody the role of Chandler Bing, they said that there was like no one else for that role, which originally was like supposed to be kind of a smaller role. And they said that they would always cherish the joy, the light, the blinding intelligence he brought to every moment, not just to his work, but in life as well. And I think the thing that really got me was they ended the statement with just saying, this truly is the one where our hearts are broken.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I can feel it in the zeitgeist today, you know, as I cruise around and just see what everybody's saying and watch some of the clips there, you know, and there was a resurgence. I feel like there was, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not super pop culture savvy, but they had that reunion where the original cast came together and they had that, you know, really heart-touching discussion. And then I noticed there was, I don't know why, but just all of a sudden it was like there were Friends merch just everywhere over the last couple of years or so. And people, you know, talking about watching it on TV. It just feels very odd and timely to have had that resurgence, his book, and then to have it end this way is very tragic. We're just about out of time. So any of your final thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, you know, for people who, you know, you mentioned the Max reunion. So like all 10 seasons of it are on Max right now. And I think with the resurgence of just seeing some Friends merchandise, I know once again, to just bring it back to stuff that Perry was doing for other people. He had helped launch a line of Friends clothing during the pandemic with all the proceeds going towards just COVID.
Excellent. All right. Well, definitely a talent, will definitely be a big void there where he was, but you know, his book is there for you if you need it. I haven't read it yet, but now I am much more motivated to do so, knowing that it's sort of, you know, one of the pieces of his capstone of his work there. So Kirsten, where's the best place for people to follow you?
Oh, yeah. You can read along with me on insider.com. You can follow me on Twitter or X. It's just my first name, Kirsten, last name, Acuna. And yeah.
All right. Well, Kirsten Acuna, thank you for joining us right here on The Brian McClain Show at today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You should hear what Ross Cameron is talking about.
Anthony Albanese had the numbers, had every opportunity to legislate this daft, wet, incoherent, bureaucratic, racist, divisive new bureaucracy. He could have, as indeed Victoria and South Australian governments have, decided to introduce it by legislation. He had the numbers in both houses. The Greens would have supported him, but he chose to go for the glory, to enshrine it in the Constitution as a completely untested and unproven model. And happily, we can report to you today that the measure has been soundly rejected by the common sense of ordinary Australian people by a thumping 60-40 margin, which you virtually very, very seldom see.
Ross Cameron on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts. It isn't a theory. It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency.
on air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, well, we have a Speaker of the House. That saga has finally come to a close, and the House gets back to work. There's a man holding the gavel by the name of Mike Johnson, and he says he's looking at possibly subpoenaing Hunter Biden. So we had to call in Senior Counsel at the Lawfare Project right here, Gerard Felitti. Gerard, welcome back to the program. It's great to see you today. What do you think is going to happen to Hunter? Is the laptop from hell going to get some more, that cockroach pile going to get some more spotlight shined on it?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we're going to be dusting off that laptop, powering it up and seeing what's on it now that we have Congress back and stuck. And I think it'll be interesting to see what we find. I fully expect that those subpoenas will issue, that Hunter Biden will be called to testify. But I also think it's not going to be the first thing that happens. The House is doing an investigation properly. So they're going to want to get bank records. They're going to want to get testimony from other people. And then as more facts get uncovered, then they're going to call in Hunter and put him on the spot and have specific questions to ask him.
I'm pretty excited about this. I got to tell you, I'll be honest here. I was one of the holdouts that was enjoying the quote unquote chaos of the House not being able to work. But you know me, I'm a bit of a skeptic. And, so, you know, I get entertained by some of these power politic things. But now that we're back in business here and we're talking about actually getting these subpoenas out, what do you think they're going to, do you think, because last time we spoke, I believe we were talking about the 40 or so FBI confidential informants that had documentation and things that seem to have been suppressed. Do you think all that stuff is going to get pulled into the House investigative committees?
Oh, I think that has to. I think those are subjects of subpoenas and inquiries as well. All the material that's been collected from the Justice Department and from other government agencies, from the IRS, I think all of that is going to get captured now that we know what it is and where to look. The next round of subpoenas is going to specifically get that information. And once counsel on the House side has had an opportunity to look through it, then they know the next steps, what else they need to collect. Those documents are going to have names. They're going to have information about witnesses. Those people are going to get phone calls and subpoenas. So it's a very methodical grind to get to the bottom of what actually Hunter Biden was involved with.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine it's a strange, Gerard, to me, because it's like we've been hearing about this laptop for so long now and seeing video off of it, you know, just the videos alone that the public has access to of Hunter Biden's shenanigans, what he does for fun, are pretty staggering. I mean, I've never seen anything like that in you know, presidential history here in the United States. I'm sure, you know, presidents and their families have had their personal lives and such. But I mean, at what point do we say, hey, wait a minute, who are these people in these videos? And what led up to this? What happened after this? You know, are they okay? Are those, you know, are these legitimate business transactions? I mean, this has got to be a mountainous, monolithic investigation, wouldn't you think, if they brought all, because there's so much that the public already knows, and then all this other stuff that's been sealed.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, everyone has skeletons in their closet. No one's kids are perfect. And I think the public would have looked the other way if it was just a first son behaving badly. But the problem here is that there are business dealings that implicate Joe Biden. There are phone conversations that Joe Biden was allegedly a part of. Now, there are transactions that implicated, apparently, other members of the Biden family. So that's where you start to get into problems, because it looks fishy. Normal people who do business don't have, you know, they don't run transactions through family members. Normal people who do business don't, you know, speak in code and refer to the big guy. Normal people send out a contact, they get they send out an invoice, they get paid, and they put it in their bank account without laundering it or seeming to launder it through other people. So that's where we have a problem. We have a problem that a lot of other people are implicated, and it's making whatever Hunter did look a lot shadier. And then to top it all off, his dad's the sitting president, and at that time, the sitting vice president of the United States.
Yeah, that complicates things, because we get to the what about the big guy segment of this discussion, and it's like, well, the first son, that investigation in and of itself, we've got what, like 14 months left for this session, for this, until the next election. So is that, do you think that's enough time to do everything that's going to be necessary to have a, you know, robust investigation?
Well, barring any unforeseen issues, and to be honest, we might have some. We still have, Congress is not just focused on this, unfortunately, so we can't just get to the end of this thriller. They've got to still deal with a budget, which we don't know what that's going to end up looking like. And they have to survive a couple of other issues, including Russia, Ukraine, and Israel, China, and whatnot. But normally speaking, an undistracted committee could very easily get to the bottom of this in the next 14 months because you've got a focus. You've got a staff attorneys who are working just on this issue. So to issue subpoenas, to get documents, to go through the court motions to get those documents if necessary, 14 months is plenty of time. So we should be seeing a mountain of evidence and testimony by the time this Congress runs its course.
Okay, excellent. And I'll follow on with a question on that. And we're going to take a brief headline before you answer, but I'm curious to know how important it is and how important should it be to the Congress to get this complete, or at least get it to the point where they have enough that they can present to the public, such that we have a 2024 election where the public is appropriately informed about the context of the candidate, assuming it is Joe Biden. This is the Brian McLean Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNTRadio.live.
The station, the first to broadcast.
Breaking news.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The young German-Israeli tattoo artist whose body was paraded through the streets of Gaza after being kidnapped at an outdoor music festival by Hamas has been found dead, Israel announced on Monday. The Times of Israel reports that the Israel Defense Force ground operation into Gaza expanded overnight, with dozens of terrorists said to have been killed by coordinated land and air attacks.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
All right, Gerard, what do you think about that? How important is this investigation going into 2024? Many people say that the 2020 outcome would have been different if the DOJ and the FBI had not suppressed the information that will be there within this investigation.
No, I think this investigation is crucial for the 2024 election, and not just for the office of president, but also as a referendum on government as a whole. Why are we here? We're here because the DOJ and the Department of the Treasury, the IRS, didn't really do their jobs and get to the bottom of what was going on their own. So we start asking questions. Was there political influence? Did this happen because Hunter Biden is Joe Biden's son? It's not just about Joe Biden and what he may have done in 2016 or 2020 or 2024. It's about the whole of the government and whether it's working, whether it's biased, and whether it's working for the American people or for its own interests. So it's really important that we get to the bottom of this in time for the next election.
I totally agree with you. You know, it's not just about the Biden family. It's not just about Hunter or Joe. This is about a system that protected them. This is about our American legal system, our federal systems, our court systems, our media systems. I mean, this is a systemic failure. This is a systemic crime, a systemic disaster. We would have to see all the evidence to know if we can call it a crime, a failure, a disaster, or whatnot. But it certainly feels as though this has been coordinated by enough apparatchiks in the systems an extended investigation should flow forth from this if everything shakes out the way we expect it to, don't you think?
Well, I think so. And at the very least, it raises questions about a two-tier level of government or the justice system, effectively, where what's good for thee is not good for me. And I think there's no doubt that if any one of us were facing the same level of scrutiny or the same accusations that Hunter Biden were facing, there wouldn't be any sweetheart deals. And there would be a straightforward investigation, potentially a prosecution, and then justice would play out whichever way the jury found. But here it looks like there's something weird going on. on. It seems that this got so protracted and complicated that we needed Congress to get involved to hold hearings. And the more we hear coming out of Congress, the more it seems that these hearings are justified. So there are a lot of concerns here that it's the independence of the judiciary, it's the independence of the justice system that's at stake. And these are questions that are that need to be answered by the next election.
Yeah, it's almost like at this point, one could go through the House Judiciary Committee record for the last 3 years, 4 years, 8 years. I don't know how far we could go back, but just, you know, to keep it narrowed on where we're at right now, you could write books. I feel like, you know, most people don't want to sit down and watch, you know, C-SPAN or committee meetings and stuff. Maybe they'd be more interested in books or podcasts, but it's like the stuff that is going into the record is somewhat monumental, wouldn't you say? I mean, even if if we can't get the government to change back to the way it should be and get rid of this weaponization and this two-tiered system, it would be a salacious true crime novel to just have that written down or recorded in some way that the larger public might check out.
I think somewhere right now, some producer in Hollywood is going through the transcripts thinking, who do I get to play Hunter Biden in this saga? We are going to see this become a movie or at least a TV program, and it needs to be. That's the only way you get people's attention nowadays. It's this, people want to see something that's this salacious. When it's coming on C-SPAN, you're absolutely right. No one pays as much attention. When it's buried in the news, and it does tend to get buried in mainstream media, no one pays attention. But maybe as a popular movie, you could have it an action-adventure movie, you know, the adventures of Hunter in Ukraine, or the adventures of Hunter China, maybe even add in North Korea. You know, we can play a little with the facts for TV, but I think that would make it more interesting to people. And honestly, I mean, the facts that are coming out, the videos that the public has already seen in the pictures, yeah, it looks like a film.
Oh yeah, yeah. Maybe he could do. Maybe somebody could make like an Apprentice style spinoff and just call it The Menace instead of The Apprentice. Yeah, there's some open goals there. So if you're a writer, producer, podcaster out there, and you're listening to Gerard and I, hit us up when you make money on this, because we just gave you an open goal there. Now, Gerard, what happens if this does spill over onto the big guy's lap? And let's say it takes all 14 months. Imagine a terrible world where Joe Biden is reelected. What happens then? Are we looking at a newly, second term elected Joe Biden, looking at an impeachment? Is there any way that they're already talking, of course, we've got the impeachment inquiry already happening. Is there a way these can converge into one thing, or how do you see the Venn diagram working out here for Joe?
Well, in all honesty, the only way I see Joe Biden being impeached is something happening is if the investigation is concluded during this Congress and articles of impeachment are drawn up during this Congress. I think, unfortunately, that what we've seen, the shenanigans with the House leader lacking, the race for House Speaker and that debacle, I do think that a lot of analysts would say the same thing, that the Republicans are at risk of not holding on to the House at the next election. Maybe a better chance of gaining the Senate, but not the House. So that would impact the ability to carry out anything beyond the next election. As for Joe Biden, I mean, he's already damaged by this. He's already being primaried by at least one individual, if not two, three. We never know for sure. But the more this drags out for him, the more it might be more appealing for Democrats to say, you know what, we need someone younger. We need someone who doesn't have this hanging over them. Even though we're going to win, we're sure we're going to win. Let's not make it a 4-year nightmare. Let's get rid of him and start fresh now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a critical 14 months. And as Mike Johnson takes the gavel and, you know, power of subpoena is back, what else? You mentioned the continuing resolution, some of the global conflicts that are ongoing right now. What do you think they'll also be focusing on in the next 14 months?
I think we'll see a lot of emphasis on social issues. Mike Johnson has shown that he is the type of leader who is faith-based. He's very much informed by his Christian values. And I think that he will use that basis to focus on issues like abortion, issues like what's going on in our schools, with identity politics, with LGBTQ issues. So we will see Congress that's much more interested in taking up the mantle on those issues as well. So apart from the continuing resolution, which may not be resolved until January, and defense spending, I think these are the social issues that will be hot button under his tenure speaker.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I don't know, but it seems like a lot of Americans at this point are leaning more towards that, towards those social issues, the ones that hit them in the schools, the one that hit them in the wallets. These sort of issues seem to, as we experience more austerity here and the middle class gets more pressure, more crime, all this stuff, open borders. I mean, it really seems like a focus at here at home is sort of gaining steam in the voting blocks. What do you think?
I think one of the biggest issues is a parent's right to know. And I'm seeing this play out in state after state after state, where you have legislation effectively saying parents are not allowed to know if their children are changing identities in school. Leaving aside the issue of gendered identity, it's the very basic issue of a school system that's divorcing parents from their rights to take care of their children and to know what their children are up to. This social issue, more than any other, will drive real voters into the next election.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, Gerard Felitti, Senior Counsel at the Lawfare Project. Always appreciate your input over here. It is very valued here at TNT. Thank you for joining us here on the Brian McClain Show at today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Gas-powered car bans and electric vehicle mandates go bust. It's about time.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
As electric vehicle sales tank and the cars pile up on dealership lots, auto executives are finally admitting the obvious. EVs aren't working. Ford hits the brakes on $12 billion in EV spending. Honda, General Motors scrapped $5 billion plan for EVs. Donald Trump has warned American workers what will happen if the EV mandates continue.
You should not pay your dues. Because they're selling you to hell. You're going to be going to hell. You're not going to have any jobs. All those cars are going to be made in China. Every one of them. You can forget it, Michigan. You can forget it, South Carolina. You can forget it, everybody. All of those cars are going to be made in China.
And yes, Trump nailed it. That's exactly what's happening. The Chinese takeover of the entire global auto trade. Unless we stop the Great Reset Madness. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Today, I have given formal notice to Russia in accordance with the treaty that the United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty. That was President George W. Bush's announcement in December 2001 that the United States would withdraw from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which commenced in 1972. TNT Radio reviews this news again, more than two decades later, as a poignant reminder as to why the situation in Ukraine is so dire today. The mainstream media has failed to explain why the US withdrawal from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty has led to increased tensions between the world's nuclear superpowers and the current crisis in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly condemned the United States for withdrawing from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty.
Today, I have given formal notice to Russia, in accordance with the treaty, that the United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty.
Russia's concern of U.S. nuclear weapons encroaching on its borders is legitimate. How would the United States react were the tables turned and Russia had a military alliance with Mexico?
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
I'm Cal Fire Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, We would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
This is the Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, buckle up. This one really kind of kicks in the gut here. The Shallow family lost their home during Hurricane Ian. They were living out of a shed and a bus parked on a property they had just purchased, but the county said it was an ordinance violation and took their home and bus along with all their contents. Joining us now to discuss is Gary Shallow. His wife and their family of five kids were forced to live in the bus they evacuated in. Gary, welcome to the program. Start from the beginning. Tell us what happened to you and your family in the wake of Hurricane Ian.
Oh, thank you for having me. Well, after the hurricane, well, we evacuated for the hurricane in the bus. And the bus we used to take our family on vacation and stuff like that before the hurricane. And we're from Boquilla, and we had a bait business out of there, and one of our shrimp boats sank out there and stuff. And after the storm had went through, and we went up there and got the boat and everything back up, we was still living in the bus, and where we were parked, we had to leave. So we started going back to parking lots and stuff like that because the home that we lived in was destroyed, and we couldn't live in the home and our business was selling bait to bait shops on the other islands, Fort Myers Beach, Sanibel, Captiva. They got wiped out pretty good. So we got this piece of property in Tropical Gulf Acres, which is in Punta Gorda. And you ain't supposed to have nothing on that piece of property unless you have a house built on it first, okay? So the first thing we decided was we're going to get a set of plans drawn up, because once you get the set of plans, then you can have the permit for everything, right? Meanwhile, we had a place to stay behind the shopping center, but that didn't pan out. So we literally got down to where I had to make a phone call to the county and tell them that, listen, I know you have an ordinance saying you can't be on vacant land and unless you have a house being built, but we have a blueprint being drawn up, and we've been kicked out of Walmart and you name it. You name the parking lot, we was kicked out of it in that bus, you know. Now this is me and my kids. I mean, one of them is disabled and in a wheelchair. So they said to me, well, you ain't really supposed to do that, but we understand your situation and everything. So we took the bus and we drove it. And I mean, there's no driveway or anything. I drove it up into the piece of property, you know, to deal with FEMA. Oh, because what FEMA does right off the bat is you apply and then they deny. It's an apply and deny process, basically, you know. And so it occurred to me pretty early on that it was going to be a while before they really had anything set in stone as far as help and stuff like that goes. So we needed to do something. Now, the rental situation in the area is already a situation, because it was already a deal where affordable housing was hard to find. So now you've had this hurricane. People lost their house and they hurry up, rented up what was rentable, and the people who had stuff left and rented, their insurance skyrocketed through the ceiling. So it made rent go crazy. A 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, $5,000, $5,500 a month. I mean, someone who works and has five kids can't. This just ain't going to happen, you know? So we were paying $1,000 a month before the hurricane.
It may as well be $1 million a month.
Yeah, right. It's just it's a joke, you know? So anyhow, our plan was, that was the plan. We were going to have the house going and get a house. The plans for the house and build it, and we weren't gonna have to worry about FEMA. I mean, we started putting a plan together pretty quick because we knew that it was gonna be an issue, and we knew we weren't gonna be able to afford nothing to rent and everything like that. So the piece of property staying on the bus wasn't really ideal, but it was already set up to kind of stay on for little vacation stuff like that. And we had a relative down the road who had running water and power and everything like that. We were living off generator now up until October 12th this year. You know,
wow.
15 months, you know. The FEMA's not in a hurry. And so now it's a deal where they have the funding. Well, don't let me get ahead of myself there. So we got on the piece of property. Well, because my son's in a wheelchair, it was hard getting him on and off the bus. So we went ahead and we tried to buy a 12 by 30 building. It was a shed, basically unfinished on the inside. And we was approved for it, and it was $325 a month. So we had that put out there, and I put walls up in it, and we insulated it, and we made it handicap accessible for our son. Now, this whole time, we're calling FEMA. We're telling them what's going on. We have a son. He's in a wheelchair. He's got cerebral palsy, you know, telling them all this stuff. We're in, you know. So meanwhile, I think it was around August 2nd, the county, Charlotte County, came out there. Well, no, it was before that. It was the month before August. They came out there with we got some paperwork saying they wanted us to come to a special commissioner's magistrate. So I said, okay. So I go down there. I already know what it's about, obviously, you know. So I go down there with my paperwork and everything I got, pictures of the boat. By this time, the boat that sank, we have it out on the property because I'm a commercial fisherman. And without the boat, I can't make no money. So the first, you know, we're working on this at the same time, trying to get back to work now. And so we get a court date for August 2nd. And I go down there with the pictures and everything and the cover sheet for the blueprint and the situation and all, and our FEMA number, you know. Mm-hmm. And I give him this whole long spiel and tell him everything. And he says, well, we'll give you 30 days and we'll see where you're at with FEMA and everything after 30 days. So I said, okay, that's good. And after 30 days, we didn't get another court date with him. And so I started calling down there because I was worried about it then, you know. And no answer, of course. And on October 12th, they show. I'm sitting there. My wife took the kids to school. And I hear a knock on the door. And I open up the door. And there's three sheriffs standing there. And it had to be at least 100 people that they got on this abatement team to take every, you know, they told me they were going to take all of our stuff. And they said, Gary, are you going to stand here? Are you going to give us trouble when we try taking your stuff? And I told them, I can't just stand here and let you take the rest of our belongings, you know? And so when I did that, they arrested me for resisting without violence, which I didn't even, all I did was answer the question.
Oh, wow. That's a new one. Yet, jeez. You know?
Yeah. So they towed the bus off, the bus that we, you know, evacuated in. We had our belongings in there, and they put that in an impound yard, and they smashed the boat up, and they put it in a dumpster. Now, that hurt, you know. And then, so now we're not allowed out there no more. And they put us up. The other county that we're from, they're starting to get a program and stuff together out here because they needed programming from the state and everybody else to get the ball rolling. And they put us up in the Holiday Inn. So we're staying at the Holiday Inn now, still waiting on that housing, which they don't have because there's a shortage in housing here is what it boils down to. They have the money and everything else that goes with it, but they don't have the actual housing to place us in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. This is insane. So what, okay, first off, your home and your boat, your AKA your place of work, annihilated mm-hmm. in this storm. So, I mean, you took it from all directions, basically. You literally yes. lost the roof over your head and your ability to make money. And yep. luckily for you, you had this extra piece of property that you know you can't go live on, but you start the process. It sounds like you laid all the groundwork. You did your everything, you know, you did your due diligence to make mm-hmm. sure that you were covered. You let them know. And this is the part that really gets me. They didn't respond to you. They ghosted you after that first meeting.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then they come and they confiscate all of your family's belongings and further destroy your boat.
Yes, they destroyed the boat for good. It's gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And the part that I have a problem with mainly is it took a lot of planning to have all them people out there and have all that machinery, and nobody sat down for 5 minutes and thought they're going to be homeless when we do this, you know? So yeah. They came and did all of that and made us homeless basically instantly. And the next day was Friday the 13th, which is why I'll never forget it. The FEMA people contacted us and said that Charlotte County had got a hold of them and said that we might need to talk to them. And I said, and I keep asking them, you know, why didn't y'all do that a month before you did what you did, you know? And the answer is really, the short answer is, if they would have, FEMA wouldn't have let them do what they did to us. So I think they just did that and then asked for forgiveness later. I don't know.
Wow. Wow. I mean, yeah. This is the Federal Emergency Management Organization. Like, you're an American family experiencing just about the biggest emergency you can. And I mean, can you elaborate on FEMA's role in this? I'm not sure I'm 100% clear. Okay, so well, are you FEMA, looking for them to help you, or are they like, what was the original your thought with
FEMA? Well, usually yes, what it was is because we didn't have insurance, we rented our home, and the way that it works is FEMA really helps you if you own a home, you know. So what we were offered in the beginning was a loan from the Small Business Association, which I didn't really understand for renters, you know. So you get denied by all that, then you can reapply for FEMA again, which is what we had to do. And then it's just a denial process. I mean, you just got to keep going through the process. And I would imagine, you know, 90% of the people probably just bail and just say, whatever, they're not going to help or whatever. But this was a situation where that boat, you know, when I've never really had a situation that I couldn't shrimp or fish my way out of, you know. And but this one was different because the places that we could sell bait to are gone, you know, and then our home, and that we're stuck with this bus and a few things we got left over, you know.
Oh, man.
And so it's just it's a situation, it's an experience in life that I'm kind of like, you know, we've been doing like handyman work and aluminum work and stuff like that. And it's a job and it pays decent. But when you don't have a home and stuff like that, you know, when you ain't leaving home to go to work, or you're kind of waiting for you to get your home back and all this other stuff, it makes it a different thing altogether. And when you have to run generator every night, you know, that's an expense that I don't think people really, you know, $50 to $75 a day. Now you're talking, you know, it's almost $1,500 to $1,800 a month in gasoline just for power and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And they knew we were there since January, you know?
And they, I'm just blown away that nobody took that. Like you said, they put all this whole team together and nobody on that team said, can we give them 3 days notice? Can we write them an email, a letter, a phone call, a text? Nothing.
Yes. Nothing. They knocked on the door. I couldn't believe it. I really, in fact, they took me to jail without a shirt and shoes on too. I was like, can I put a shirt on? They're like, nope, you got to go. I think they just wanted me out of there, but couldn't do it without, you know. It was the craziest thing. I don't know what to say about it, you know. And it was like a, you know, we were displaced already from a hurricane, you know.
Amazing. Badly. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, and we've got about a minute left. So quickly, like, are you going to get any of your belonging backs? Is anyone helping you? And where can people help you?
Yeah, this is the deal. Thank you. This is the deal. The bus is still in lock as in impound. I can go back and get it. There's a lot of people that will help us pay for it. We have some money to pay. That's not the problem. The problem is we don't have nowhere to put it, and they won't let me put it back on my property. And I told him, I mean, this is a situation where it's an emergency. So I think that they have a law there that is okay most of the time. But when it comes in the wake of a natural disaster, Mike can kind of step on people's basic human rights to, you know, shelter. So if you get denied by FEMA, right, there's only one other way to do it, and that's to do it yourself. But if they stop you from doing it yourself, and then FEMA don't do it, then what's the other option is my question to them, you know? As far as help, we just need people to keep spreading the word and praying and sharing, and that's it. That's all we're asking for. We feel like if the word gets out to the right people, it'll rectify, you know?
All right. Well, we're going to have to stay in touch, okay? So Kimberly will keep in touch with you, and we're going to need an update on this because now I'm emotionally invested in this story because I like you. All right, man.
Thanks, Brian. Absolutely. You, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate you too, Gary. Thanks. You too. Thank you for sharing your story with us. This is just amazing.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate y'all and we love you.
Absolutely. We love you too, man. Our prayers are going out for you. And yes, you'll join us again here on the Brian McClain Show at today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Stay tuned for Misty Winston.